RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It was back in February that we last caught up with Louise Parsons, and I think Daniel Gale in the Hawke's Bay, Louise from Eskdale and Daniel from Esk Valley, the owner of the Esk Valley Camping Ground. We thought it was a good time to get an update on how things are through them for those communities, of course, following Cyclone Gabrielle, which to many is in the rearview mirror, well and truly, but to others, not so much. A big issue is the category system based on the Gabrielle event. Welcome back, Louise and Daniel. Thanks for coming back on RCR.
Thank you for having us again.
Likewise.
How is everything? There's your big $64,000 question to get things going. Louise, do you want to start?
I'll start. Where do I start? I guess for some people it's feeling like back to normal, but for us in the middle of it all, it's really not. There's still a lot of hurt out there, and there's different hurts for different reasons. It's been such a long process, and I think a lot of people are just tired and given up, which I hope we can talk to today. And the category system that was brought in, which determined how people were going to spend the rest of their lives, is still causing problems. And there's a few different reasons for that. And, it all kind of ties in with what we want to sort of catch you up with today. With the category system was brought in to determine where there was a greater risk to life. And so that's pretty much the broad brush that they used. And so as we've mentioned in the past, there was no rhyme or reason for it. So, for example, as you said, I'm in Eskdale and I live in North Shore Road, and my street wasn't on beachfront, so it wasn't actually flooded, but right behind me was, and part of North Shore Road was. And we had a fatality, so young Ivy was killed. Whereas across the road, and we're in Category 2C, so the rebuilds for the majority of my neighbours is actually completed. We had 33 flooded properties. So they're allowed to rebuild because the mitigation is going to be coming in because it's grossly inadequate. Across the state highway, which is walking distance, they're all Category 3, and they flooded exactly the same as our neighbours. So, and there's a lot of examples like that. There are properties that didn't flood and are in property Category 3. So there is still no rhyme or reason, and people have had to just suck it up and move on. And for people that had like lifestyle blocks and were running businesses from them, there's been unintended consequences to this category system. So like I said, the category system was used to determine who's at risk to life. That's been done now. And so what has been left with us is the category system still in place. So people, for example, that might have a business and they were living on the land, obviously, because a lot of them are lifestyle, they've had to sell that 2 hectares of land to the council, and so the rest of the land still belongs to them. And so if they want to run a business, they are in Category 3, and guess what? They can't get any insurance. So how can you run a business without insurance? And there's no reason for them to be in Category 3. They can't live there. The title's been changed. You can't build a dwelling or live there because it's apparently floods happen at nighttime, so you can't sleep there. Remembering that we don't get evacuated. I know I'm sounding really cynical, but it really does my head in. Dan, do you want to jump in and explain about your own land is exactly at this?
Well, and I think we should point out to listeners, this is what I have in front of me here, just so we know. So this category system is based on the Gabrielle event, which I have here equals a 1 in 200 to 500 year event, depending on location. Yet mitigation based on stop banks with protection for a 1 in 100 year event in order to move people from Category 2 to Category 1.
So,
living anywhere is risky, right? But when you look at these numbers, very slim chances of anyone getting caught up in an event again. Or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything. And if you sit in the meetings with the regional council and you listen to the mitigation meetings and the theories behind them, remember, these people don't know this land, whereas the locals do. And the locals come up with way better plans than they do. A lot of people, because we live near Panpac, and Panpac helped fund some mitigation, you know, the getting the structural engineers and et cetera. But now they're being blamed because people are saying, well, you know, Panpac have come up with a stupid mitigation that's just going to cause more problems for other areas. Well, they haven't come up with it. They helped fund it. It's the regional council that chose the cheaper option that's actually going to be a worse option than what we're currently in. And yet here we are all rebuilding. So it's just crazy. You sit there listening to these meetings thinking, I know I'm no expert, but even I can work out that that's not going to work. And we went to the Parkify meeting, and the stock banks have already been built back to the 1 in 100 event, 100-year event. But it was never, they were never built to that in the first place. And the regional council was saying, no, they were already 1 in 100. Well, they never were. They, you know, when they first did them, I don't know when that was, but they were never actually up to 1 in 100. And now they're saying, well, they're back to that. Well, they never were. And so you're sitting there in just absolute disbelief. And the reason behind it, as Nick Peake spelt out, was, it's so that we can get you people from Category 2 to Category 1 and then you can move on. Well, where's the risk to life component coming in on that? Because remember, our community's being decimated because of this bloody Category 3, and now that's suddenly not an issue. There's no risk to life. We're just going to build back, get you people back up and running, even though you were flooded just as much as Category 3 people.
Sounds like arbitrary lines on a map.
It is exactly that, because I can use my own house as an example. So you've got the Hawke's Bay Regional Council, the ones that came up with category maps, and then you've got the Hastings District Council and the Napier City Council. And that's where the insurance companies get their information from. Now, one of my neighbours who wasn't flooded, we're on the beachfront, has just tried to sell their house. The people that tried to get insurance couldn't get insurance. They couldn't find out why, but they finally said it's because you are in Category 2C. We're not in Category 2C. Our neighbours are, but we're not. And so when they then went to the Hawke's Bay Regional Council, the Regional Council said, no, you definitely aren't. And they provided all the proper paperwork that we needed to say, no, you're not in Category 2C, but the Hastings District Council map says that we are. So I would have thought that was a pretty massive mistake to make on such a huge thing that's happened.
By professional people.
By so-called professional people, yes.
You know what this is starting to sound like to me? It sounds like managed retreat.
Oh, go Daniel.
Pretty much. My big concern has been for a long time that we are going to become the next Matatar. And they're using similar language, saying that there's an intolerable risk to life in the valley and areas of Parkify and other places. So they're using that, and then we have what's deemed a voluntary buyout, which has got no voluntariness at all. In fact, they've just gone and changed the rules around how long the offer is open for, even though myself personally has been asking for months and months if we are going to have through till June 25, because I have a complicated situation owning a holiday park. Apparently, the category system is only meant to be for residential, not commercial. Obviously, my commercial part is residential-like, and yet they refuse to answer my questions. Can I operate? If I can't, will I be compensated? And then, of course, they never want to talk about the fact that there was no warning for anybody. However, I have my own warning systems and suitably got our people out. There's other issues that are arising, however, unintended consequences. Me and my wife have fortunately been able to move from town back out to the Esk Valley, and we've bought up on a hill 12 metres above the flood line, and yet the bottom of our property, a 10 metre wide strip, has a bit of Category 3 on it. Our insurance broker could not get us insurance for our property.
For the whole property. Okay.
The whole property. We got it in the end with FMG, but can't insure our bottom fence. No big deal there, but this is one of the issues. The guy across the road, he can't get a loan to finish his house off. His house is Cat 1, but he has a slither of Cat 3. So we're starting to face issues like that now, and it's pretty disturbing.
Okay, so because we know about Kapiti. Okay, they haven't had a flood, but has a similar feel. Do you think this is a constructed, there's some construction in what's going on here? They've constructed a situation where they want to effect something.
Are you talking about the 2K radius of if you're near the ocean?
Yeah, well, that's what's happening in Kapiti. But again, there's similar language. There's the insurance company. There's arbitrary lines on the map. Yep. There's information. Okay, it's not exactly the same in Kapiti. There's no paper trail for a particular contract that thought all this up. And they're using worst-case scenario modelling, even though no one gives it any credibility in the world anymore. So what I'm trying to think is, I've got a suspicious mind, of course, as Elvis Presley once said. It sounds like the inconsistencies between the two councils, the problem with insurance, it kind of is playing the same tune to me and maybe others. But, you know, what do I know?
It's funny because I was talking to someone about this very thing and they used Wike and I as an example. And it's this whole, we're just going to change, what your land title is. Or your land, it's not category, I can't remember, on the district plan, and it's going to be a flood zone for 2K if you're 2K near the ocean. Well, I am or out on the ocean. And so suddenly you're not going to be able to get insurance anymore for floods because you're in that zone. And it's like, but they haven't told anybody, they're just doing it. There's no consultation. And that's something that we're finding here is that all these processes are changing, all the policies changing, but nobody is being notified about it. I mean, I think we have talked to you in the past about when they suddenly were going to charge Cat 3 people for the demolition of their own houses. And I mean, Dan and I went absolutely full Karen on that one, and the council did stop it. But that was a policy that they said, it's not significant enough to consult the community.
Oh, what?
Exactly. Not significant enough. It was, $2 million it was going to cost, Dan?
Yeah, $2 million across 90 to 100 land homeowners or families. So they do have a history of trying to change the policies on us, and they have just recently done that in the way they do the valuation for the people. So they are getting worse off valuations. But more concerningly for me, and this comes back to the Matatau example and also your Levin example, I found out on the 23rd of May when they had a council meeting that it turns out that between HDC, Napier City Council, Hook, the Regional Council, Cyclone Recovery Unit and the Regional Recovery Agency, that they are discussing behind our backs what the future use of Category 3 land is already.
Yeah, here we go. So who gets the land? Who wants the land?
Well, apparently we're all left with the land. Yeah, who knows?
Okay.
It's not voluntary. That's the big problem. If it's voluntary, we should be left. If we want to stay, we should be left with our rights intact, and I should be able to run a business as I see fit with all the proper safe and health and safety plans. And meanwhile, up the valley, we have State Highway 5 where thousands of cars come through per day. And that's okay. It's hypocritical.
I got to ask this because the lack of response at the time was glaring, right? It's fair to say. No warnings, nothing, even though,
correct,
Dan, you knew what was coming down. I think you got to ask this question. Was that looking away or not paying attention or something, an opportunity for someone?
No, it turns out they don't have a single plan. And okay, under Official Information Act, it has been found out that civil defence is not even required to have flood evacuation plans for anywhere. And even worse, the local civil defence didn't know where the evacuation centre was.
Okay, so that settles that. I just had to ask that because you kind of wonder. All right, so this whole thing about threat to life, why do you think they're being so Karen about it?
It does seem very dramatic. I think it basically feels like they're covering up their failures to have any plans in place to act on anything They messed up. We pay the price.
Paul, that's a question I've been asking this whole time, is because why would they put themselves in that position? It's like a regime, because it's like, well, like Dan said, we're the ones that stuffed up, but we're going to use that so that there's fear out there. And, you know, the biggest fear is that emotion of risk to life. That's a very emotive statement, because the only risk to life was that what they put us in.
Look at COVID.
There you go. And I'll tell you what, it was the Labor government that were in when all this was done. But what upsets me more is that the National government are doing bugger all about it to undo it. They've undone everything else that Labor did, but not this. And yet they stood in public meetings assuring us that they would be there for Hawke's Bay. They haven't been, not at all.
What about the LIM reports? What do they say? Have they been carrying any of this?
The LIM reports is where that 2K thing is going. So, I mean, it's not, and of course that's another subject, but it does illustrate the power that they have. So in my case, because I'm not in a category, if they want to change where I live, they can change the LIM report. So even if they lifted the categories, like Dan was just saying, well, they can just change the purpose of the land. So you might have, and just to clarify, Daniel and his wife have moved to a residential house.
Okay.
It's not the campsite that he's allowed to go back to.
Oh, okay.
That's what he's still, you know, and how many months are we on? And he's still fighting. He still can't get an answer out of the council, which is just.
So they won't let you go back to your own campground, Dan. Is that what that means?
I can live in the house, but they refuse to tell me whether I'll be able to restart my business. And the issue there is that every year for a campground owner, you have to get a camping ground license issued by the local territorial authority, in this case, Hastings District. So I could go and rebuild everything back, which I'm allowed to do. And then they could turn around and say, sorry, we're not going to issue a license and basically fine you out of existence.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay.
I can't move on. But I can still stay living there. That's still legal.
Right.
But now
you can't operate the business.
Yeah.
He can, but it's at a massive, massive risk. Yeah. All they need to do is say,
we're
not going to issue you a license, and then Dan and his wife can try and get compensation and move on. But they won't do that.
The funny thing is, we live in a country where you can tie a rubber band to your feet and jump off a bridge, and that's perfectly okay. But we can't. Seemingly can't run my holiday park by a river because civil defence failed everyone else, yet I performed my job well and proper. And who's driving it? The government. Yeah. But when Labor was in power, apparently told the regional council to categorise land into these categories, and now that they've done that, either Hastings or Napier councils are following that. The real concerning part is, and it says on the regional council's website, the category system and its definitions have no basis in statutory law.
Oh.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Time to get a lawyer.
We've got a lawyer.
I need to be a lawyer, yeah.
So local government in your area is just following orders. Is that how to define it?
They're just following a tick box system, and I don't fit.
But they don't need to buy into this, do they?
They had to, actually. That's a good point because when the category system was introduced, the councils collectively had to negotiate with the government, and it was basically take it or leave it. We'll give you 50% of the funding that it needs to for your regions, but if you don't accept this, it will take it away from you.
Oh, so they were persuaded.
Big time, just like we're being persuaded. Yeah.
So this is a top-down, or was, but still is, it seems, a top-down thing.
It was, and that's the thing, is National had an opportunity, or have an opportunity, to change this. It can still be changed, because what we're going to be left with in Hawke's Bay, and New Zealand, I might add, is you're going to have all this land, every time there's a weather event, you're going to have all this land that's going to be categorised. And then there's going to be all this land just sitting there, like Parkify, which is, it produces so much produce for the economy, and it's derelict. You know, it's not going to be productive anymore, and that's just going to keep going. So soon there's going to be no land. Where are people going to live? Where are we going to produce crops and apples and
15-minute cities?
Yes, yeah, yeah. And even Minister Mitchell agreed with me with that one. You know, I mean, what are you going to legislate against? There's flooding, there's earthquakes, there's tsunamis, there's crossing the street. You know, we're allowed to cross the street, and there's more deaths on the road than anywhere. So how come we're allowed to do that?
Something's going on, surely.
Yeah, you think. You know, I mean, I am a skeptic. I pride myself on that because I question everything. But even I can't make any sense of this. There's more to it. You're right.
And, you know, people, we're big boys and girls, right? We make decisions, we assess the risks in our lives, and we take responsibilities for them. If we get them wrong, well, that's sometimes too bad. We need to be wrapped in cotton wool, and big mummy and daddy have to look after us all the time, it sounds like.
Well, that's exactly what happened on the night of the cyclone, is that there was so much risk assessment happening, people were left stranded. You know, the community just got in their boats and went and saved people on their helicopters, and then, you know, wrapped over the knuckles for doing that. But, you know, it's like when you go in for surgery, you know the risks, but you still do it. You take an informed risk, and it should be the same here. This is a flood, you know, I mean, the whole of Hawke's Bay is on a floodplain, so we're all at risk. But if you come to the Esk Valley and you want to buy a house that you know has been flooded, well, then you know the risks. So get a warning system. Dan had one. Panpack had got one. You know, I feel safer because of Panpack than I've ever felt.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Wellington for the nearly 8 on the Richter scale earthquake. It was frightening, but, you know, people still live here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not as though the earthquake risks a secret.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that the flooding has, you know, it's kind of been forgotten, that, you know, that we are flood susceptible.
Yeah, well, things drift into the sort of the memory pretty quickly, I suppose, and then start to fade away.
Well, and, you know, I guess what surprised me the most out of this whole thing is that there's all this be prepared, be prepared, be prepared. And I don't know how much money they spend on that, the advertising that, be prepared. They teach the kids at school. And the only ones that weren't prepared were the ones that were responsible to you know, for our safety. They're the only ones that weren't prepared.
Yeah, so it's BS.
It's BS in a big way. And, you know, it used to be community-led. Labor took that away, and so now it's centrally led, and look where that got us. Look where that got us. And so I think because of the review, I think it's going to go back to the communities.
It just sounds so set up, you know? I know I'm banging on about it, but you know, getting one thing wrong is one thing. Getting two, maybe. But when it starts to be a pattern, then it's kind of similar in some ways to what's happening in other areas, which involves categorizing properties, catastrophizing the risk of living there, and overriding property rights in the end to push people away.
To what end, though? Why would they want to do that?
Well, someone wants the land.
For what?
Or put them in a configuration of living a part of a bigger plan. Otherwise, everyone's freaking incompetent.
Do you know, and I was just going to jump in there and say the number of meetings I've been to, I have to think it's the latter, you know.
Just incompetence, right?
Utter incompetence.
There's nothing set in concrete, and so staff changes and people forget, you know, and everything changes. I mean, you know, Dan, you're at that meeting where that woman stood up and said, well, were you working at the council when that Parkify flood bank was put in?
Stop bank, rather, sorry.
And the guy said, was I? No, I don't think I was. So no one was aware that the thing had never been built to the spec of one in a 100-year event.
So no fragmented institutional memory.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see how
that
could go.
And so you get away with it, you see. I mean, the fact of the matter is the guy that was in charge of the civil defence emergency management has still got his job. So
he's still there, is he?
He's still there. He's hanging in there.
I hope another Gabriel's not coming if he's still there.
Well, Yeah, he wasn't here for that, remember?
And he wasn't here
when the review came out.
He
wasn't here for the 2018 flood either. It's almost like he's the only one that knows and he pokes off.
Oh, okay.
It is sadly true. You need to look after yourself first and foremost, but in terms of civil defence, they need to put both of those words back into the meaning of it and have it run by the civilians out there with the support of a central place, and they actually need to do the defence part and actually be ready and have the plans in place and know where to go and where to send people. But they don't have any of that, so currently they're more like an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
If that. Well, people died. Let's not forget people died, and probably somewhere in another jurisdiction, maybe in the United States, there would be corporate manslaughter there.
Oh, and there would be here if it was a private business. Let's not forget that. There's a guy, you know, the ex-CEO of the Port of Auckland is before the courts right now because somebody died at the port.
Yeah.
So what's different? Why is it different? I tell you what, they're lucky it's not China.
Yeah, that could work out pretty bad for them, couldn't it?
Real bad. Wouldn't be about whether he's got a job.
Seriously, people need to be held accountable, don't they? And if people
will be, Paul, because that's, you know, Daniel and I, there is a lawyer, and you know, there's two things that we're looking at the moment, and one is the unlawfulness of the voluntary buyout system, and you know, really compensating people properly. There's people that are getting low valuations. There's one example where someone's $300,000 worse off.
Yeah,
because they've been forced off their land. That's just one example. But we're also looking, I mean, I'm very close friends with Ella and Jack who lost Ivy, and they're angry. They're really angry. And, you know, they don't want compensation. They want someone to be held accountable. They did not need to lose their baby girl.
Oh, if
they'd been evacuated, she would be in their lives still.
Oh, dear. That's so sad.
It's tragic. And no one's even said sorry to them, not even said sorry to them.
Well, then you're admitting that you might have been responsible in some way, I guess.
Or maybe you wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
Well, where's the humanity?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know about that. Crikey.
Yeah.
So you're working on the legal front and anything else that we need to know about?
So we're working on the legal front. We have been for quite some time, but we've kind of been waiting to see how it all played out. And, of course, we had a government change. So, naively, we thought, they'll save us.
Yeah, we thought that too about other things too, and we're not so sure.
Yeah. And I'm a big National supporter and ACT and a little bit of New Zealand. I actually quite like the Coalition. But, you know, they need to step up on this one. They've turned their back on it to be perfectly brutal. They really haven't. We've had meetings with
But why? Why?
Feels like they just want the problem to go away.
Yeah, but they don't take the job for that. Mm. They don't take the job so it's easy.
No, well, I think with in regard, so before the election, we had Chris Pink here, and he was here a lot, and he really understood the issues. And so then the election happened, and he wasn't made the Cyclone Recovery Minister. Mark Mitchell was, who's got the biggest portfolio and the most, one of the most important with, you know, police.
Police.
And I think he's rightfully, he should be doing that because I think he's great.
But well, I think he is a former police officer, dog handler, I believe.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff about that man. He knows what he's doing. And he speaks the right lingo in regards to the problems we have with crime here, but he doesn't have time for this.
Too bad.
Yeah, I agree. Too bad. So that's why we're looking down the, you know, they're looking down the guns of legal action.
Okay. And, well, that might sharpen the pencils a bit.
Well, we'll see. But yeah, Dan and I are ready to push the button on that one. So there'll be two different types of legal action. One will be for the loss of life, and the other will be the voluntary buyout system.
Yeah. Now, it hasn't
been voluntary at all.
The whole category system, and it's unintended consequences that has come with it.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think we've covered it enough in this chat for people to understand where
I think so.
Where things are? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, just, you know, just to have another whinge, I sort of look at how the councils have let us down. And, you know, now they've put the rates up by some astronomical figures. You know, we've got the Hawke's Bay Regional Council who are now going to be working out their rates based on the values of our properties, you know, capital value, not just land value. And so that's going to increase people's rates exponentially. But the councils have also put their rates up. And, you know, we've just heard that Dan can probably talk better about this one, but today it's been announced that the four-lane highway that we're supposed to be getting to you know, to move Hawke's Bay along is now might be a toll bridge. So, and here we go again. We've got to just keep paying and paying and paying. And all the, you know, the roads have to be rebuilt, but they were supposed to be rebuilt better. And they've decided not to do that. They're just
build back better.
Build back better. And they're not doing that now. They're going to just be doing it according to the budget. So they're just going to be built back to what they were, which was shit in the first place.
Okay. All right.
So it just gets, it's just like when you just think it's bad, it gets worse. And then when you think it can't get any worse, it does.
I'm so sorry to hear about that.
Thank you.
Okay, Dan, you got any final words before we end the chat and people can cogitate on this and process it?
Yeah, the spin that the local mayor is giving out of Hastings about how good the buyout's going, plain isn't true. It's going horrendous. There's ombudsman complaints. There's many, many unhappy people. People are being forced to sign in duress because they have no other opportunity. And the voluntary buyout office is putting the screws on people to hurry up so they can wind it all up before Christmas. It's an abomination of a system. It's done behind our backs. And it's simply not good enough.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you, you two, for coming on and being so sort of honest and upfront about your situation.
Thanks for keeping it out there
for us, Paul.
It's important.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
As I say, we like to try and join the dots if there are any to join, but it sounds like what you said, Louise, incompetence. But where does how do you get such a high level of incompetence? Don't they, when they interview these people for jobs, don't they have to, I don't know what they're talking about?
The irony is that the Napier City Council, I think 11% of the 25% rate increase is for salaries because they need to attract good people.
Oh, okay.
Who would want to work there? The good people don't want to work there because the good people have got good businesses and they work for good companies.
Yeah, okay. All right, Louise Parsons and Daniel Gale, thanks for coming back on RCR again. And, you know, we won't give up on this. We'll keep following it.
Awesome,
and,
thank you
and,
so much.
And good luck with your efforts. And so sad to hear about, you know, what you just told us before, and pass on our regards to those people, please.
Absolutely. I do have some good news about them, which I'll share with you at another time.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk again sometime soon, maybe.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.